history through the eyes of those who lived it. This is Hometown Heroes, proudly honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the program that reminds you no matter where you live in this great country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, there are some people around you with some incredible stories to tell. And we'll never know unless we ask a few questions and take that time to listen. We want to honor our veterans for their service and sacrifice. We want to preserve their stories so we don't forget the price that's been paid for our freedom. And along that journey, we learn a lot. We're educated, we're entertained, and so often inspired by these stories from our greatest generation. Today, we're going to meet a gentleman named George Poplin, 93 years old, lives in Central California now, but originally from Meeker, Oklahoma. How big a place was Meeker, Oklahoma?
Now there's 1,000, but when I was growing up, there were 500.
500 people.
27 seniors graduated with me.
So growing up in a town of 500 with three older sisters, what kind of things were you up to as a boy?
We played a lot of hide and seek. Also took corn cobs and put a feather in them and then threw them over the top of the barn to the other side of where the other group were.
And what, you're seeing if it lands on somebody's head or what?
Yeah.
Were there a lot of corn cobs to go around?
Well, yeah. We had two horses, and so they ate a lot of corn. My dad had a 57-acre ranch, and he had about 7 acres of corn, 7 of cotton, and about 3 other products. So we had plenty to keep busy.
You probably had a lot of chores to do.
I did have. Well, we had 500 chickens,
ooh,
hens. When Dad started, he started out with one incubator and was selling baby chickens, buying eggs from people and selling the baby chicken. Then he got two incubators in a bigger building and started handling some feed. Then he moved down on Main Street, because this was at our home, and we were on the end of the block.
Was your job collecting the eggs, or what'd you have to do?
We did everything. You collect the eggs, you carry water to them, feed them.
I would imagine that amount of chickens probably leaves quite a mess to clean up, too. Did you have to clean all that stuff up?
Yeah, you had lumber for them to stand on. They crapped down through that, and you had to scrape it out with a hoe.
That must have been a fun job.
Oh, yeah. I didn't do a whole lot of that. My sisters did, but my asthma kept me from doing some of those things.
Likely story. Sounds like a convenient excuse.
It helped.
Every generation probably has its own unique game that kids play growing up. But I'm interested in this game of throwing the corn cobs over to the other side of the barn. Why'd you put a feather in it? Did that help the aerodynamics?
It made it go straight.
So you'd throw a spiral?
Yeah.
Like a football?
Yeah.
That was my question. Do they go farther with a spiral, or if you throw them end over end like
no,
a tomahawk?
You throw a spiral.
Yeah.
You put the feather in there to guide them. They'll go straight instead of wobbly.
And this are chicken feathers or what?
Yeah.
So what does it feel like if you get hit in the head with a spiraling corn cob from the other side of the barn?
It wasn't very funny. So you dodged.
Anything to keep yourself occupied. Huh?
Yeah.
Did you notice a difference when the Great Depression hit? I mean, you've got all that livestock and all that produce. Did that take a hit during the Depression?
Not as bad as other things. Of course, what caused it in our area was the dust storms. Out in western Oklahoma, there was dust piled around a barbed wire fence, clear up over it. The fence caught the dust, and it all landed there, and you still can see it if you drive down through western Oklahoma.
Well, and so many people left Oklahoma in those years because of that.
Yeah.
But you guys had enough business to stay put?
Yeah. Or didn't have enough money to leave. I don't know which it was. We were pretty well established.
Do you remember in those years as a boy, do you remember having a dream, an ambition, thinking to yourself, hey, someday this is what I'm going to do?
Yeah, I was going to be a county agent.
Why is that?
They worked with the 4-H clubs and the farms and advised farmers and stuff. That's where I was going, Stillwater, Oklahoma. But I didn't get there.
Well, Uncle Sam had some other plans for you, and we're going to hear about that. But I'm just wondering, I'm trying to imagine myself in your shoes. And if you had three older sisters, and the oldest one 17 years older than you, Did they come up with any plans for you? Did they try to manipulate you or
No.
didn't get you any hot water?
A funny thing, I went to the store. When I come back from service, I was over at my older sister's house.
Mm-hmm.
I went with her to the store, and somebody there asked her, is that your son? Well, it's 17 years difference.
Sure. I'm sure you never let her forget that either.
No.
Well, and you mentioned the asthma. How old were you when that came on? How big of an issue was it for you? How much did it hold you back?
It held me back a lot. I couldn't run very far, get out of breath. The medicine they had then for asthma was some kind of a powder, and you put it on a tin plate and set it on fire, and you put a funnel over it, and you breathe that smoke.
Wow.
That's supposed to give relief.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure it did, but that was the only thing I knew of.
Mm-hmm. And I wanted to talk about the asthma and what that meant for your potential in the service. But before you graduated high school, I guess it would have been your senior year in high school. Something happened that everybody seems to remember. December 7th, 1941?
I had won a trip to Chicago with the 4-H Club.
Uh-huh.
I got home on the 6th of December. And downtown on Sunday afternoon of the 7th, somebody heard it on the car radio, I guess it was. But we didn't have rush radios in those days. My dad had a radio, and he had electricity put into the house for the radio. The rest of our lights were gas lights.
When you heard that news about Pearl Harbor, did you understand it? Could you grasp what had happened out there?
Not really, because, you know, you had no TV. It wasn't like if you'd have been in California. I mean, it was a distance from us. And then they started drafting boys, and some of the high school kids went in. I did not. I stayed there and helped Dad. Then when Mom passed away, I lost that.
Let's talk about that. So your mother was ill for a while.
5 years, breast cancer, but she wouldn't have it operated on. I only knew one other person in our area who had cancer at that time. It just was not a common thing like it is today.
So when they're starting to draft young men from your town, you have an exemption because you're needed on the ranch and your mother's sick, and then also because of the asthma? Or you were told that you were 4F because of the asthma?
Then when I was drafted, I went to the Oklahoma City to the board up there, and they give you an examination. Generally, they looked in one ear, and if they could see out the other one, it was okay. But they asked me when I was being checked, my blood pressure was high.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, well, why don't you eat lunch and come back after lunch, and we'll check it again. And I did, and he checked it, and he said, do you really want to go in the service? I said, I sure do. So I didn't have any high blood pressure. 3 weeks after starting training, I went to the doctors to see if I had high blood pressure. No, I didn't have a drop.
And so people understand the situation with your mother. As long as she was living.
Right.
But once she passed, obviously that exemption's gone.
Gone.
So then you get drafted. But you had been told, by a doctor that they probably wouldn't take you because of the asthma?
Yeah.
But when they needed bodies, they needed bodies.
That's right.
And there was something else that had happened in your life right before that. Didn't you get married right before you got drafted?
I got married 3 weeks before I was drafted.
So that was a short-lived honeymoon, huh?
Very short.
So you were, 19 years old when you got married?
20.
Uh-huh.
She was 16.
16 years old. Is there more of a story there that we should hear about?
Well, we struck it off pretty good.
How did her father feel about you?
You know, I went in, and he was an honorary character. They were already in bed, and I went into the bedroom and asked him if I could marry Pearlie. And he said yes, which just about knocked me over.
So you did. So you'd lost your mother, and not long after, you find a wife, a teenage bride, and you're married, and then you get the news that you're drafted.
Well, I knew I was going to be drafted.
You knew that was coming. Did she know that was coming?
Yeah.
Was there part of you that said, hey, if I get into this war, I might not ever see her again?
Well, I went to Fort Sill, Oklahoma, and we left from there to Anniston, Alabama for training. She came down for about half of that time. We had a rented room in a house, somebody's house, and I'd go home whenever I could. I had a pretty good sergeant, so I did all right on that. But then we went home for 2 weeks for Thanksgiving, and I left to go to Fort Meade, Maryland. And from that time on, I never heard from her.
The whole time you were overseas?
The whole time, until I got back in the States. And that gives your system a shock. You say, is she pregnant? I don't know.
Has she found somebody else?
Well, I didn't think about that.
That happened to a lot of guys in the world.
I know it did. I know it did. When we were in the hospital, a guy got a Dear John letter from his girlfriend. He couldn't write. And so two or three of us composed a letter to her. Hey, it was funny. I bet she burned when she got it.
So when you were drafted, and you said you went in for the physical, and they said you had high blood pressure, and then they asked you if you really wanted to go, and you said yes, so they looked the other way. What was it that made you want to go so bad? Why was that important to you?
Well, because all the other guys were going. You didn't want to be a 4F-er.
Did you have any clue what to expect, what it was going to be like?
Are you kidding? And my first day, when I went to Fort Sill, a soldier, one that was there, cornered me, and he said, I've got a letter here. And he said, I can't read. Now, they drafted him, and he couldn't read. And then I had one taking care of me in the hospital that couldn't read.
What were your expectations? What did you think Army life was going to be like?
I had no clue. You know, we had no TV. When they had the big fights, everybody gather around the radio and listen to the fight.
The boxing matches? Joe Louis and stuff like that?
Yeah.
Was there anything in the process of your training that was particularly difficult or challenging or made you wonder what you got into?
The worst part was the cross-country running. Now, the short exercises, I had no problem with them. But when I'd get to run, I'd get out of breath.
Because of the asthma?
I guess.
And how long was it from the time you started training to the time they sent you overseas?
We were training 17 weeks.
Uh-huh.
Went home for 2 weeks, then went up. It took us about 2 weeks to get up to Taunton, Massachusetts, where we got on the USS Mount Vernon ship and sailed to England.
Had you ever been on a ship before?
No.
How'd you take to it?
It was all right.
Didn't get seasick or anything?
Well, no. The night before we went, boy and I went to town. Of course, he didn't have any money. And I bought 2/5 of whiskey. There were no bars to drink in. So we went out behind the building and drank one of those quarts. And then my memory left me.
Woke up on the ship or what?
Well, no, I come to quicker than that. But 3 days out, there was a couple of guys. We had to eat standing up. You know, I had like a tray across through there. And these two guys looked at me and started laughing. And I said, what the blank are you laughing about? They said, well, you're the guy that we helped put on the bus to go back to base, and you didn't know it. My pants were black from here down where I vomited.
Wow. Did you learn a lesson there?
Oh, yeah. I learned I couldn't drink.
Well, I guess if they hadn't helped you, you wouldn't have been on the ship probably, huh?
That's probably true.
This was December?
December. We were in a palace in Givet, France. The palace bordered on one side to France, the other side to Belgium.
Uh-huh.
On Christmas Eve. And we were staying there to get ready to go out to our units.
Did you know what kind of unit you were going to be in?
Had no clue.
Wherever they send you.
Where we were on Christmas Eve, they gave us a rifle, a carbine, to clean. Now, they come gummed, and then you have to clean them before you can use them.
Right.
Then they took them back and gave them to officers, and they gave us a big gun to carry. No pistols, just M1.
Uh-huh. Well, I'm interested in, if you can remember any of this, as you're heading over, again, you're a 20-year-old kid. You just got married. Your wife is staying in the States, and you're heading overseas and going to be risking your life. Do you remember experiencing anxiety or fear or concern that you might not make it back?
Well, they gave me a little Bible from the Gideons. I was passing them out, and I still got it. I read quite a bit in that.
Is that something you kept in your uniform, in your pocket? Or?
Yeah. It was a New Testament type. It was very small.
Yep. So you get there, as you said. They take you toward the area where you're going to be fighting. But the guys that you're going to be serving with, did you know them at all, or the guys you trained with?
No, we were divided up.
Because you're going to be replacements, and you're heading in all different directions to different units.
And the company I went into, I was there a couple of days, I guess. I became number 2 gunner because the guy that was carrying the gun, we had 30 caliber water-cooled machine gun,
uh-huh,
and 81-millimeter mortars. And then, of course, the shells for those things. So everybody worked on that crew.
Yeah.
The guy that got hit and I replaced came back. And, of course, I had to move back one. But the day I got hit, I'd been on night duty, the last shift of the morning. So they brought hot breakfast to us, which we weren't used to having. When it was through, since I was already dressed and, you know, this guy and I started carrying the cans back down to the Jeep, and that mortar shell hit in between us, and we split. He got hit in the chest. I got hit in the left hand, right arm, and my buttocks.
A lot of guys say that's the weapon, the enemy weapon they hated the most.
Yeah.
Because you didn't know when it was coming.
Well, if you heard it, it was going overhead. If you couldn't hear it, then when you get scared.
Mm-hmm. Were there mortar shells flying for a while before this one hit you? Did you know that
no.
this was happening?
In fact, the night before, there was a big hill in front of us, mm-hmm, cliff, and there was a white flag up there. So we assumed they were surrendering.
So you were really caught by surprise.
Yeah.
And we're going to hear more about the extent of those injuries, as well as his lengthy recovery, and the mindset that has helped him overcome those setbacks. Find photos of Mr. Poplin then and now at hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes Facebook page, and we'll be right back after this.